Actually, the honor is mine to be able to join you. I'm going to put this here. We're going to live there dangerously. Okay. Rabbi Rosenbaum originally sent me an email apologizing not to be able to make it this morning. I was very happy because speaking in the presence of Rabbi Rosenbaum is intimidating. Tom Achotham standing here. But I also wrote him, I enjoy his presence because he always gives me honest feedback afterwards. He says he likes it. Okay, thank you to Stuart and to Judy for sponsoring this whole idea of the meaningful tefillah. It's a very special idea, it's a very special project. The fact that people are interested in trying to enhance their tefillah, trying to do better in tefillah, is inspiring to me. Just that alone, whether you accomplish, you moved anywhere, anything, just that idea itself, I think is special. I think the question, we're talking about meaningful tefillah, so the first question is, let's rephrase that sentence, what do we want to get out of tefillah? What meaning should, how should it be meaningful to us? Would be probably the translation of that phrase, meaningful tefillah. How is it meaningful to us? But I want to ask two more questions I think that maybe are very important to ask. What does Kodesh Baruch Hu want from him, that he should get out of our tefillahs? The second question. And the third question is, what does Hashem want that we should get out of our tefillahs? Not what we want to get out of our tefillahs, but what does Hashem want us to get out of our tefillahs? So the topic is meaningful tefillahs, so we're going to try and look at it from the angle of what's meaningful to us, what's meaningful to Hashem, and what does Hashem want us to get out of the tefillah. I'm going to start with a few questions. The voice feedback is good?
No, yeah.
What? Too loud? Too soft?
A little echo. It's the system, it's not
you. Okay. So should I stand further away? How does that work? Huh? Okay. Some people like hearing their voice. I get a chance to hear it twice. Now, come on, how could you not like that, right? Okay. David's here. David's told me all the jokes that I know. Okay. Chazal refer to tefillahs of Avodah Shebaleh. We'll often call them Avchem. And the Sifri says that means you're serving Kodesh Baruch with your heart. What Avodah is in a person's heart? That's referring to tefillah. The Rambam codifies that in Halacha, that when a person davens, a person has the mitzvah, he's mekayim the mitzvah, we'll often call them Avchem. He's serving Kodesh Baruch. The mitzvah of the Raisa, which we say in Krishma, twice a day, you're serving Hashem with your heart, is tefillah. It seems to be difficult to understand how our tefillahs fulfill that mitzvah. Let's just look at the tefillahs for a moment. The Rambam, at a different point, the Rambam says that the binyan, the way a tefillah is set, the structure of a tefillah is there's three parts to the tefillah. There's first the Shabbat, the praise that we say, which is the first three brachas of Shemoneh Esrei. There's the thanks at the end, which a different time I'll talk about how all three of the brachas at the end focus as thanks, which seemingly only one of the three does, but the three, the Rambam titles, puts them under the umbrella of thanks at the end. And then there's the middle section, which is the act of beseeching Hashem, which the Rambam sees that that's the primary element of tefillah, which means they're beseeching. Is the tefillah. That's the act of tefillah itself. And then there's introduction, which is the praise. And then there is the conclusion, which is the thanks. So I come to Kodesh Baruch Hu, Hashem, I'm ready to serve you. I'm here to serve you. I would like a little bit of das, and I would like a little bit of health, and I would like a little bit of money, and I would like a little bit of... That doesn't sound so much like service. It sounds like a laundry list. You come, I think it's like, you know, the children are here to serve us, and that's how it doesn't have to work like that, right? So they give us a list of what they want. That's not really service. How is tefillah, which seems to be a laundry list of what we want, understood by Chazal to be an act of service? It's interesting, you find a similar question in regards to Kabbonis. Kabbonis clearly is referred to as Avodah, and the Avodah of the Beis HaMikdash, etc. It's also called Kabbonis, which is the idea of connecting and coming close, which seems to be a different thought. We picture the idea of Avodah with the word Eved, a servant. So the servant of the king clearly is looking at a distance and a gap. And all of a sudden we're coming over here and the korban is coming close. So how could this same idea of a korban, which is avodah, which is distance, eved, service, servitude, be then it's talked about closeness, etc. We find that construct in tefillah constantly, the words Avinu Malkeinu. We sort of combine the two things together. Avinu Malkeinu. So Melech represents this distance and this awe and this fear. Avinu is closeness and the warmth. And we sort of combine the two together. And how do we understand that this combination? Another place where you find this very striking, this issue of this contrast, is in Birchas Kriyas Shema. Chazal clearly referred to Shema as an act of Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shemaim, accepting the yoke of heaven. Now that means there's a master, there's a king, and you're accepting his servitude, you're accepting servitude upon yourself, you're making him the master and you're the servant. So Shema is about what we would refer to as Yira, the awe, the awareness of the distance and the gap between man and his creator. So if I'm going to write the bracha that you say before Shema, Habocher b'mo Yisrael b'ahavo, sounds very strange. Why is it b'ahavo? Habocher b'mo Yisrael b'yira. Why are we introducing Shema with this element of love? And then immediately after the first pasuk of Shema is v'ahavto. So we go from love to yira to love, and we go back and forth. And that seems to be that we're seeing that throughout tefillah there's this flow back and forth. And that seems to be something which is integral to tefillah, and that's what I want to try and address today, and how that's going to make a difference to us. Okay. I think I said this idea once when I spoke here in the shul. I don't know who was present here that remembers. So if you remember, it's Chazora. It's a good review. If you don't remember, it's fresh. Imagine the following scenario. So I'm a Rav and I pass in Shilas, and let's imagine that scenario, right? I'm a Rav and I pass in Shilas. Okay, next step. So it's Neil and Yom Kippur, and two people walk over to me. They've just finished Shemoneh Esrei and they have a question to ask. They want to know, did they fulfill their mitzvah of davening in the Eil of Yom Kippur, arguably the most important feel of the year. And the first person says, you know, Rebbe, I really was very exhausted. It's really very hard. I couldn't focus. I'm not feeling 100% anymore. But I focused on the first barak of Shemoneh Esrei, like the Halacha says I'm supposed to do. And after that, it was a wash. I said the words, not sure exactly what I said or not. One person. Second person says to me, Rebbe, I had the most uplifting meal I've ever had in my life. I was so focused. I connected to everything over there. But my mind wandered during the first bracha. So what do I answer to these two people? Did they fulfill the mitzvah of davening or not? So to the first one I say, yes. You had kavanah during Berachas Avos, you're yotzei. For the second person I say, no. Did not focus during the first bracha, you're not yotzei davening. He had the most uplifting nilim as ever he had in his whole lifetime. But not the first bracha, doesn't count. So that's an extraordinary thought to think about, that the importance of the first bracha of Shemoneh Esrei. I almost say it in different words. It says to me that everything that tefillah is supposed to do for you is there in the first bracha. That's a little bit overstating it, but let's think about that. That's what we just said. If you got the first bracha, good. The rest is okay. If you didn't, it's not okay. And I think the challenge for us is we don't understand the message of the first bracha. It's a very challenging first message. What's the message of the second bracha of Shemoneh Esrei? Hashem is powerful. We see different examples of his gevura, of his might, of his, right? That's very inspiring. We would stop and think about that. He's Mechayim Meisim, he's Samech Neuflim, he's Rafi Cholim, right? Matir Asurim. Powerful actions, that's all inspiring. Yes, I get it. The third bracha is Kedusha. Hashem is beyond the human intellect to understand. What's the message of the first bracha? Take it a step further. The Medrash says, Medrash at the beginning of Parshat Lech Lecha, Rashi quotes part of it, that Hashem promises Avraham elements of bracha, that he's going to be that you're going to be increased in many different ways. Chazal said it means we say l'kei Avraham, we say l'kei Yitzchak, we say l'kei Yaakov, and b'chol choisman. However, we don't say the bracha at the end is not again Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. It's just Avraham again Avraham. That's the matter of Rashi quotes. The Medrash continues and says, and Hashem says, that not only I'm going to give you a bracha and Shemoneh Esrei, yours goes first. So your bracha goes before mine. So really the bracha is about Avraham. Like that's really what it's about, that his bracha goes first. So all of a sudden we've said that the most important bracha Shemoneh Esrei is not about Hashem, it's about Avraham. Like that's a very, very, very strange Medrash. What does that Medrash say? Okay. Okay. And then we still haven't figured out what that has to do with Avodah. That's the next step. Imagine the following scenario. Imagine I'm a good Chassidish Rebbe, right? And I can do Moifsim, you know? Right? So every Rebbe has to have a few Moifsim in his repertoire. It's like, it's good for the biography, you know, the art scroll, whatever it is, right? And so one day I'm walking to shul and I hear a voice. So Chazal said the Nevuah goes to women and to shoita. I'm not a woman. I hope I'm not a shoita. So I'm hearing a voice. So must be there's somebody talking to me. It's not a Nevuah. I look around. I don't see anybody. So I continue walking. I say, you know, you never know. Maybe I am the section of the shoita. I hear it again, right? And it says, Rabbi Reingold. I look around. There's nobody there. I'm trying to figure out what's going on. I look down and there's a little ant on the road. And it's talking to me. See the Shrebbe, right? The ant's talking to me. And the ants start saying, Rabbi Reingold, we like you a lot. We think you're really special. And like, you know, now listen, covet you take wherever you get. Okay. So, and matter of fact, we've decided we have a title for you now. From now on, you're known as the Rabbi of the Ants. So I ask you, would you think that I would really be taken with that title? I don't think so. I don't know, we've never tried it yet, but you know, assuming that hasn't happened, it's not going to happen, I'm not interested in that title. Because the gap between me and an ant is so great that it's really relevant to me what the ants think about me. And to give me a title of an honorific, that I'm called the Rabbi of the Ants, doesn't do anything for my... It's not any way a compliment to me. And I look, hey, Avraham makes sense. The gap between a human being and a Kodesh Baruch Hu is much greater than the gap between me and an ant. We're both creations. He's a creator and I'm just one of his creations. I'm worthless. I'm insignificant. I'm nothing. The size of the universe is billions and billions of light years, trillions of light years, quadrillions of light years, whatever the number is, right? Whatever those words mean, you can't picture a light year. How big that is. And a Kodesh Baruch Hu is, that's insignificant vis-a-vis a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Rechim HaKotel Kaczynski, in 1953, when they had the Birchas HaKama, so he put out a little booklet in honor of the Birchas HaKama then, and he had some halachic discussions, and at the beginning he had a Musar thought. So he was responding to the fact at that point in time they were just building the Hale Observatory in Mount Palomar. And the scientists felt that when they complete this telescope, we're going to unlock the secrets of the universe. So he was taken with the elements of over self-importance that these people believed in themselves, that they're believing that they're going to figure out all the secrets of the universe because they have this telescope. So he says, imagine a ball the size of this room. Right? Can you picture a ball the size of this room? Like a real big, you know, those big exercise balls, but it's sort of like a cut out of hand. It's the size of the room now. Okay? Now imagine on that ball there's a speck of dust. So what's the size of the speck of dust compared to the ball? 1 billionth? Okay? Now, a speck of dust is made out of millions of molecules. So there's a molecule on the speck of dust. In the molecule, there's an electron. An electron compared to the size of there's an atom. An atom could be very small compared to the size of a full molecule. Especially when you're dealing with organic molecules. There's an electron inside the atom. Electron is over 1/2000th of the size of your atom. And on that electron, there's a little being saying, I'm going to unlock the secrets of that big ball. the universe, the galaxy, the solar system, Earth, United States of America, California, Mount Palomar, little guy on top. Elokei Avraham. It's the most extraordinary statement that we could ever say. What does that say? Kadosh Baruch Hu cares about mankind. How puny we are, how insignificant we are, how small we are, how unreal we are, because we're only creation. We're so important to him that he takes it as a praise when he says, Elokei Avraham. That's a statement of love. An overpowering statement, overpowering statement of how much love he has for mankind, how much love he has for us. That he's willing to take that as an honorific, the rabbi of the ants, the God of Avraham. That's the message of the first bracha Shemoneh Esrei. The most important word in the first bracha Shemoneh Esrei is the word be'ahavo. Be'ahavo is not modifying the last sentence. Be'ahavo. It's Elokei Avraham, be'ahavo. Elokei Yitzchak, be'ahavo. Elokei Yaakov, be'ahavo. Gom chasodim tzvayim, be'ahavo. Be'ahavo. Who taught that lesson to mankind? Avraham. What did they believe before that? They believed that there's a God. They didn't deny God. But they said it's beneath his dignity to be interested in man. And Avraham Avinu's message was, no, man, God cares about man. He loves us. He cares about us. And the same way it's his praise to serve and take care of us, it's my praise to take care and serve you. And his chesed was an expression of his deep understanding of this message of the Kadosh Baruch Hu's interest in mankind. So if that's true, I should be like him, and I should emulate him and also be interested in mankind. Also do and care for others. But if you can get the message of the first Baruch Hashem Esrei, Magen Avraham, so Yitzchak has a message of Gevurah, and Yaakov has a message of etc. But the main message, Hashem didn't create the world, we should have Yira. What does that mean? Hashem created, he's standing before creation. All of it. He's created the world because this way we'll be scared of him. He created the world because he wants to be mated to us. He wants to give to us. He wants to give us schar and anush. He created a world which will allow us to do that. How do we do that? So the Rambam is a fascinating Rambam. The philosophers grapple with the question, what goes first, Ava or Yira? What's greater, Ava, Yira? The Rambam doesn't do that. The Rambam in Yesod HaTorah in Perek Beis says, what is the way to reach Hashem's Ava and Yira? He lumps it together. The Rambam lumps together Ava and Yira as one process. And he says, when you contemplate the distance between man and his creator, you have tremendous awe of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. You are so insignificant and so puny and so nothing in the presence of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And when you realize that he reaches over that gap and he reaches out to you, you're filled with a tremendous feeling of ahava. And as soon as you realize how big that gap is, you have yira. And you feel that Hashem reaches out to you over that gap, you have ahava. And it's a constant cycle between ahava and yira. That's how the Rambam understands it. So the same process of contemplating that gap, you know, you have over the watch the gap, right? By the subway, right? Watch the gap. Was it watch the gap, right?
Mind
the gap. Thank you. Mind the gap. Right. Mind that gap. Be aware of that gap. Be aware of what it means, the distance between the creator and his creation, and how insignificant you are vis-a-vis him. And that's going to create in you a tremendous feeling of love to God's world. Mind me going over the philosophical discussion a little bit. Sir Huttner in his Pachad Yitzchak, he grapples with the following philosophical question. We know man is created in the image of God. Now, what does it mean? It doesn't mean physically. It means we have the same functions, midos, nature, ability. We have many different ways that we emulate God. So he says, we have a problem. Does God have Yira? Man fears, God's not afraid of anything. So how is it possible that we, as created the image of God, can have an attribute which he doesn't have? That's the question that the philosophers grapple with. He quotes it from the introduction to Milo Sotoro, which this question was presented in the introduction to Milo Sotoro. So he says, I don't see the problem. So let's explain something. Imagine, if you'll be in the situation, you have to deal with it, right? You're walking down a dark alley at night, and you see a fellow coming towards you, and he's 300 pounds, and he has two bats in each hand. What is your reaction? You're scared, right? Your emotion, what's your emotion? Your emotion is fear. You might react by running away. I would suggest that, yes. But let's say you're 350 pounds with three bats in each hand. Big spritz. Next look at you when he runs the other way, right? What's the issue? It says the issue is your awareness of your limitation vis-a-vis the other. Yira is the awareness of a limitation. Hashem puts limits upon himself, so he has yira. So yira is that the acute awareness of my limitations. That's the root of the concept of yira, he says. So the greatest yira is just being aware of our limitations vis-a-vis our Creator. Which there's no greater limits. Rav Huttner continues, and he talks about this idea of chesed vis-a-vis yira, and he says, and this is actually the different context of the beginning of Rosh Hashanah. Isn't it fascinating that the verse says about Rosh Hashanah, and Rosh Hashanah, you should send shalach monos le'im nocham lo. The Pesukim describe that they came back to Bayis Sheni and they're celebrating the Rosh Hashanah there back in Eretz Yisrael. And the Novi, as it says, that they should send monos, they should send portions to those who do not have food. So that's Purim, it's like Shalom Monos. What is the Rosh Hashanah? It says Rosh Hashanah is Yira. Rosh Hashanah is awareness, total awareness of that gap. He's the Melech and we're the Vodah. He's judging us, which means we have no intrinsic existence of our own. He gives existence. Chassid Lubavitcher said that people make a mistake. They're not scared of Rosh Hashanah. He says, because Chazal said there's a rule, HaMotzin HaKharei LaBaraya, the one who has possession has advantage in court. So we have possession. God has to prove against us. He says, no, Hashem says, I have possession, you don't. We don't have our own intrinsic existence. Hashem gives out a parcel of life called in packages of a year. At the end of Chav Tes Elul, that package ends. Do you get a new package or not? That's very scary. Rosh Hashanah is a moment of year. So what do we test it? He said Hashem didn't create the world. We should be afraid of him. He created the world that we should be close to him. He should create the world for Chesed. But he understands the only vehicle that we're going to have to get to that understanding of that closeness is through the concept of Yira. So Rosh Hashanah, the main message of Rosh Hashanah is not Yira, it's Chesed. But the vehicle for that, and that's why we constantly say in that Rosh Hashanah davening, Avinu Malkeinu. Why don't we just strike the Avinu part and just talk about Malkeinu? Because that's not the point. The point is Avinu. The vehicle is Malkeinu. How do you introduce Shema? Habachai b'mei yisum b'yahavu. What do you say? Shema Yisrael Hashem Malkeinu Hashem Echad. You introduce Hashem gave us Shema. He gave us a vehicle to have Yira from him because this way he can create that love between us. The Steiber takes this thought and he goes a step right. He was writing a letter to a young man having difficulty with Emunah. And he says he finds that the biggest impediment to Emunah is Gaiva. The more the person is aware of how limited he is and how little that he has and how much he needs his Creator, the Emunah is automatic. So the biggest impediment to Emunah, he says, is the person's Gaiva. And he said it's Barakum Anus, it's true, it's tried and tested. That when a person develops a feeling of anivus, of a humility inside himself, the Muna comes automatically. That's what he writes. So I'm suggesting to you that Shemoneh Esrei, the B'kashas of Shemoneh Esrei, are not about a laundry list. It's about a recognition that I can't do it myself. Hashem, I need das. Rashiba would always tell us a story. There was a Adam Godel in Europe. His name was Ramot Pogromansky. Ramot Pogromansky was an absolute genius. That's the best way of describing him. Rabbi Lopansky spoke about him a few years ago on Tisha B'Av for like over an hour. Of just his genius. Rav Gifter told us that in the history of Tel Shiva in Europe, only two people got the title of Ilui, of a genius. One of them was Ramot Pogromansky. He came to Shiva, he had no background, he was a Balshuva. He was firm, but his father died when he was young. He was running his father's factory at the age of nine. He was manager of the whole factory. Rabbi Lapian met him and said, this young man has to learn Torah. He sent him to Tel Shiva. He came to Yeshiva. Within 2 years, he was in the highest share of the Yeshiva. The highest share of the Yeshiva was a special share by invitation only. It was Thursday nights, starting at midnight. It went till 7 in the morning. 7 hours straight pilpul. Ramoto Pogromansky has left over nothing written. He couldn't write. He couldn't write. He could, Gifter told us, he could explain the most deep, difficult, esoteric, Kabbalistic concept to make it understandable to a 5-year-old. He had a power of explaining things which was gorgeous. We have nothing written from him. See, Gifter one time asked, like, how's it possible? He says, you say every day in Shemoneh Esrei, Tochani Lovam Das. Each ability of knowledge that we have, each ability is a separate gift of God of Das. I was not gifted with the ability to write. He had like a dyslexic because he couldn't write. I personally I can read very nicely. When I write, I transpose letters all the time. It's part of my challenge of writing. I can write a letter 4 times till I get it right. When I write a suva, my akasma, I write it beforehand. I hate writing under pressure. It's just automatic. I have a dyslexia when it comes to writing. There's a separate act of giving das for each element. So what does that say to you when you come to das? I don't have any das on my own. God gave it to me. You know how humbling that is? Hashem, please give me das. It's not a laundry list. It's humility. That's the avdus. That's the avodah. That's the casting oneself down in front of his creator. But the purpose of that is not to feel lowly and to feel cast down and depressed. I have nothing of my own. What am I? It's to feel Kadosh Baruch Hu's love he wants to give to you. So Kerbonis, which is where one would actually, as it were, an Eved, avoid it, he would throw himself down in front of his creator. Our Korov, our close. It's closeness. The ability to throw oneself down is what creates closeness. Human relations to friends, as long as I'm focusing on myself and how wonderful I am and what I want, etc. It's all about me. There's no relationship. When I make myself vulnerable and I recognize I have limitations and I need the other person, the other person plays a role in my life, we have a relationship. Humility is intrinsic in any valid, true relationship. I need the other person. Nobody feels they want to be in a relationship but the other person doesn't need them. Both sides. I don't need you. You know, I don't want to be related to somebody who doesn't need me. You get involved in these type of syndromes. You're doing that. You're not healthy. Any healthy relationship requires humility. Tefillah is the ultimate act of humility. And therefore it's the ultimate act of Hashem's love. My Rishiva Rav Isaac Gozman, Zichron Livracha, one of the Tells of Rosh Hashivas, said a comment once. I never really asked him what his source was. He said that the primary purpose of the B'kashas of Shemoneh Esrei during the year is the Chasima. That all of that is to lead to the final sentence, Baruch Atah Hashem Chanin Ratoas. I want you to ask and ask and ask to recognize Hashem is the one who gives nas. I want you to ask for refuah, you recognize Hashem is the one who is the refuah of Rabbi Yisrael. I want you to ask for panosim, Hashem is the one who is the refuah of Hashem. He said, but during the Saras of Yeshuva, he said, the Bakash itself is the focus, not the Chasima. So I always wondered, since I developed this thought, I've been thinking about this thought, I wondered, am I disagreeing with my Rosh Hashiva? Saras of Yeshuva is days of Tshuva. It's also referred to as Keruhu Behiyosu, Kol Hashem in the days that he's close. On Rosh Hashanah, we don't ask, well, because you're not supposed to ask for things on Rosh Hashanah. That's very difficult. We have a lot that we want to ask for. And basically, we're saying we're going into the judgment, and we throw ourselves at the mercy of the court, and we ask for nothing. And Hashem, Hashem, you're a melech. That's what Halakha says. So my Rosh Yeshiva of Time Stein, Zichron Lebracha, one time said is that that was for the generations of higher levels. For us, the act of asking is what makes Hashem the Melech. So the Zman of Karuv, the Karuv of the Yom, this is when we realize that the asking is so much more imperative than any other time of the year. And the asking means so much to us. But the fact that we're asking says that we can't do it ourselves. If we honestly think about what we just did, I want to understand things better. Hashem, please help me understand things better. I want my child to understand things better. I want my friends to understand me better, right? I want my Rav to understand me better, right? Right? Please, Hashem, give the Rav das, right? You know. Please, Hashem, give the Talmidim das. And the Kehillah also, right? There's a lot to ask for in the first bracha already. There's so much that I want, the world should understand things. Like, I wish people understood this. Okay, so did you daven for it? Did you ask? Re'evanyenu. So where do you ask for a lot of these personal bakashas, different things, people in difficult situations? Re'evanyenu. They once asked the Belzer Rebbe, where do you daven for a person who's childless and wants to have children? He says, Re'evanyenu. It's an inui. Person in difficult situation. Re'evanyenu. Somebody one time asked me, maybe a political side, like, it's always going to have a good political argument this week, at all, upset about something. Somebody asked me in the Midrash Yeshiva, they don't say the tefillah for the sahal. So I think he asked the wrong person. I asked him, how often do you daven for the sahal? He says, once a week on Shabbos. He says, I daven three times a day in Re'evanyenu. There's people who are in danger. They're my brothers. They take care of me. I daven for them. I don't need a special tefillah, but somebody wrote 20 years ago, 30 years ago, to tell me how to daven for my brothers. There's young men, young women, 19 years old, putting their lives on the line. Are you davening for them? How much do we need Hashem's protection? Any moment. My cousin Eretz Yisrael Bela, her dubi, who's now Rosh Hashiva, Baruch Hashem, her dubi was in Hesder. He was on patrol together when they first started the dual patrols between the PA and the Tzahal. So he's walking at nighttime with a person who hates him, who has a machine gun in his hand. She didn't sleep for 6 months. One of his friends didn't make it home because of that. It wasn't published in the news because the news doesn't talk about those stories. At any given moment, the person crosses the street. Who said he's going to make it alive to the other side? We have no hold at all on health, on life. We have no hold on anything. We are so, so fragile. And that's what Rosh Hashanah says to us. We are fragile. And be comfortable with that. Because there's somebody who loves you, who's taking care of you, but you need to ask. And you're going to feel his outpouring of love in that conversation. So I suggest that maybe this is why it's called Vodesh HaBalev. It's a tremendous emotion which is taking place over here. It's an emotional interface with our Creator. So the bottom line is about a relationship. The purpose of tefillah is to be related to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We spoke a different time about tefillah as part of a relationship. And really the Rebbe of Davin is to talk. Rebbe Tversky, Rebbe Dr. Abraham Tversky, says a story. He was in Eretz Yisrael, and he was davening by the Kessel, and he sees that they're leading this elderly, blind, Sardi gentleman to the Kessel. And he sees him caressing the stones, kissing the stones, and then he starts talking. And he basically starts telling the Kodesh Baruch Hu about his day. He says, Hashem, thank you, I was able to get up this morning, it was so special of you. And he starts just going through his day. He says, it really wasn't my business to hear, but the person, he was talking loud enough that it was hard not to hear him. At one point, he pauses and he says, I'm sorry, I told you that already. And Rabbi Tversky said, I realized at that moment I've never davened in my lifetime. This person knew without a shadow of doubt he's talking to somebody. Tefillah is an act of a conversation. See, that's our Creator. I mentioned that I heard from one of Rabbi Victor Miller's grandsons that his father used to talk in a conversational voice. And his grandfather used to talk in a conversational voice when he would daven. He says, we don't need to sing. We don't need to jump up and down. We don't need to scream. We don't need to... I once had this conversation. I'll tell you how he did it in a moment. I once had this conversation. The first year I was here besides teaching in the Yeshiva Gedolah. I also taught 8th grade. So it was definitely, you know, I was coming from a little bit different world, Tels Yeshiva, 23 years in Tels Yeshiva to 8th grade in Yeshiva Greater Washington. Just for the record, they warned me beforehand that these boys have a lot of secular backgrounds and I shouldn't have to be careful how I speak in English, etc. You got to speak in the language, you know. So I spoke English. So the first day, the boys looked at me and, what does that word mean? I said, I don't know. Tells Yeshiva, we have these words, but I guess over here, in this very secular background, no, 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 they don't know the English. So I'll teach you this. We did it every day of the whole year. We did a new English word in the Gemara Shir. Okay, so I'm being introduced to a teacher that came here to teach them English. And while this is happening, one day I was talking about davening, and I happened to be a fairly slow davener. And one of the boys asked me, like, you know, Rebbe, like, it's not a nice way to talk to your friend. You walk over to your friend and say, David, how are you? That's weird. That's what he asked me. So that's a great question. I said, the reason why I speak slowly is not because the person on the other end needs time to absorb it, it's I need time to absorb what I just said. I want the words to talk to me. And yes, when you say, David, how are you, do you really mean it? Or is it just a phrase? You know, you'll always have the story, whether it's, imagine it's apocryphal, or whether it is or it isn't, you know, about the person who calls up, so how are you doing? Aunt May just passed away. Oh, that's nice. Aunt May just passed away. That's nice. Right? The phrase, how are you, doesn't mean anything. If you really want that phrase to mean something, you have to say, how are you? Yes. You have to say it slowly. You have to emphasize it. You might practice enough times, you can do it fast. I had a Chavar Yeshiva who was a much more facile daver than me, let's say. He davened more quickly than I did. And he claimed that there's two ways to eat an ice cream cone. So there's two shitas, there's two opinions, how to eat an ice cream cone. So some people savor every lick, one lick, a second lick, and some people gobble up very quickly. So there's two ways to daven also. There's the savoring every lick, and there's the gobbling up very quickly. I said, if that's how you enjoy your davening, so you get something out of it, fine, I have no problem with that. But I think the real answer, Rabbi Emanuel Feldman has a collection of essays. The name of the book is The Shul Without a Clock. He says, we're not machines. We don't daven the same way every day. Some days we're in this euphoric mood. and it goes more quickly. Some things we're in a contemplative mood and it goes more slowly. As long as you finish Sukkot Zimra exactly at 47, it's ridiculous. So how can you do that? I want to absorb the words of Sukkot Zimra. The same way in a relationship, I want to feel close to this person. I want to be vulnerable. I want to humble myself. I don't wait till the moment that I talk to them to feel that. That's something which I work on outside of the moments I'm with them. I think about how much I like that person, a husband to wife, a wife to a husband, parents to children, a rabbi to a talmud, friends to each other. You know, I haven't thought about you in the last 7 months, but I really love your lads. Doesn't resonate. You mean so much to me. I think about you. I think about how I can enhance this relationship. I think about how I want to be part of this relationship. So Hashem gives us mitzvahs. And it's not easy to do a mitzvah. But what's happening when you're doing a mitzvah which is not easy? What is happening? You're putting Hashem's will ahead of your own. You're humbling yourself. You're making Him real in your life. I want to do X, but Hashem says no. At that moment, Hashem is real to you. When you do that, when you come to davening, it's a different davening. Because Hashem is real to me. If I wait till Hashem says I talk to make Hashem real, it's going to be very difficult. I need Berachas Kriya Shema beforehand. I need Pesukah Zimra beforehand. I need brachas in the morning. When I was davening for the Omer Revelus for my father, Olav HaShalom, I found it very difficult because even in Tulsa Shiva, my pace was a little bit slow. And I had to pick up the pace. And I found it very emotionally challenging. The best, Dami for Dami, the best 2 weeks of my year was in the summertime. We took a vacation and we went to New Square, New York for 2 weeks, almost 2 weeks, a week and a half. Now, I could not Dami for the Dami in New Square, New York, and Square, see, and like, my Nusa is totally different. I wasn't comfortable. So I went, it was Ben Zman, and I went to Muncie, to a yeshiva there. It was Ben Zman, but I asked the person in charge, the Mashiach of the yeshiva, Mordechai Schwab, said to the bracha, if I could daven from the omelet. He says, only if you daven slow. I said, yes! And the point was, itself, listen, there's other options for minyanim in Muncie. If you don't like this minyan, you can go somewhere else, right? If you want to be here, you want to be here. And I davened for the omelet. And then one morning after davening, I was talking with him about, like, how do I deal with this issue of, like, I'm davening for the omelet, it's very difficult. So he said, I should make a tremendous amount of avoida out of my brachas. He says, you're not going to say brachas, have someone else say brachas. Say brachas at home even, and say them with a lot of thought. Rishab writes, Rishab writes, who do you have in mind when you say Shavuot Ani Goy? Who are you thinking? He says, is it a praise to Kodesh Baruch Hu that you have this, the Polish peasant who is unlearned, ignorant, boor, you know, he's a boor. That's praise to Hashem? Chamarich. He became a Malach of the King. Noyach, Mesushalach. But you have something they don't have. You have a relationship with Hashem that they don't have. You have mitzvahs they didn't get. That's what Shlomo Sani Goy means. Who do you think we say Shlomo Sani Yisho? Sarah, Rivka, Rafa, and Leah. And you think you're greater than them? Of course you're not greater than them. But you were given mitzvahs they weren't given. Pekach Ivrim? I had cataract surgery in both of my eyes. In 1997, 98. And I had cataracts for a while. And I forgot what the color white looked like. What I saw was white, was this grayish, yellowish color. And I had the surgery at first in one eye, so they have the patch on for a day, and then you take off the patch, and I'll do both eyes at the same time. So now at least in one eye, I can see the cataract is gone. And so it's a funny story. So I went to yeshiva that morning. This is in Tel Aviv. And I walk into the bathroom, and there's white tiles on the walls. And I just stood there, and I stared at the tiles. It was so beautiful. I forgot what white looked like. I couldn't take my eyes off the tiles. And meanwhile, of course, people walking in and looking like, what is he doing? You know, we can do all these social experiments. Everybody's saying, like, also doing this. You see, like, you know, he's doing it. But they give me the weirdest looks, I think. I couldn't care less. I was so entranced by the color white. And I came out, and I said, Pekach Ivrim, with such thanks to Kadosh Baruch Hu. And I promised myself I'll always say it like that every single day the rest of my life. And of course, that didn't work. But that's how you say Pekach Ivrim. If you say Pekach Ivrim like that, you're in it. You're in a groove, he says. You can go faster afterwards. If that's how you say your brachas should take 15 minutes. Think about what it means to have that. Think about how happy you are to have that. Say thank you to Hashem that you have that. Feel that emotion. Connect into it. But on the paper, in the shul, it's about, you get about 1 minute and 37 seconds. So that's our challenge. Our challenge is to find those moments in the Shemoneh Esrei. And find the challenge before Shemoneh Esrei. Find the moments in your life where you feel Hashem's presence. You realize how much you need Him. How much of a gap there is between you and your Creator. And feel His love when He reaches over that gap. That He says He's the king of the ants. He's the rabbi of the ants. He's a Elokei Avraham. And that's the act of avodah, that's the humility, which gives us this emunah in the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And from that vantage point, when we come to Shemoneh Esrei, it's a real conversation. So Rabbi Yehuda Miller Zatzal would talk in a conversational voice. So his grandson imitated it for me. Baruch Adonai Hashem, Elokeinu, Melech Olam, Yetzor, Uvari Kershim, Asa Shalom, Uvari Yitzchak. Good morning, how are you today? I'm doing well. The exact same tone of voice. To stress to himself, he was talking to somebody. Not to the wall, not to the sitter, not to the person next to him, but to his Creator. I think, just to find out the last thought, is I think I want to suggest the famous question, why do Rosh Hashanah come before Yom Kippur? Right? The understanding of the question is that for Rosh Hashanah, we need to be judged. Let Hashem give us a day of Kapara first. Clean us out. And then we get judged. Be great, right? Good system, right? Hashem judges us first. And says, okay, let's see if you can turn it over if you really do a lot of Shuvah. And then I'll give you Kapara. Like, how about, you know, would you... Can we do it? Negotiate this, please? Let's do the Kippurah stuff first and the judgment afterwards. We need Rosh Hashanah first. That Sashmi Chuba should be time of closeness to Hashem. Karov Karov. We need that humility first. We need that feeling of awareness of a gap. We want to mind the gap, right? We want to mind that gap. We want to feel it in our being. Feel that what it means to be that we are totally dependent for existence on our Creator. Be humbled by that. And that can lead us to a time of Kapara. Hashem can cleanse us. And we can say, you know, from that vantage point, I really failed in my relationship. Now that I'm humbled, I realize how much I haven't been there for my spouse, my child, my friend. I haven't been there for Hashem. So what does Hashem want us to take out of tefillah? He wants to take out that love. That's the goal. He wants to take out that love by being humble. What do we want to get out of tefillah? The closest to Hashem. The relationship. We live in a world where Hashem is our yadid. He's our friend. Yadid is yad, yad. Clasping hands together. There's somebody holding on to us. We live in a world which is not happenstance and not hefker, which is a horrible world to live in. It's a scary world to live in. So I'll close with the final thought. One of my friends one time said that a person really has three options how to walk through this world. He said it in Yiddish. He said he can walk through the world without thinking at all, like the animal doesn't think, the ferret, the horse. He can think and go out of his mind because it's so scary. Or he can be a Batech on Hashem and feel Hashem's presence. There's no other option. The first option is not a healthy option. The second option is not a healthy option. Once you're aware of the world, be aware of it. Realize how little you have control of the world, and feel Hashem's presence and the care, and that it's a beautiful world. And you feel it in every, that's going to color everything that you do in your mitzvahs, in your davening, not just in the Shemoneh Esrei part of it, but every part of it as well. Thank you. Shalom, have a good day.